Ow.
What's wrong, Randy?
My tooth hurts. Ow.
Your tooth? Quick, put some chocolate in it.
Ow.
It's not working. Is there a dentist in the house?
I'm a dentist, and I'm in the house.
Help me, man.
Let's see. Open. Mm-hmm. Oh. Ooh. Mmm. Ew. Have you been eating a lot of sugar? Maybe chocolate?
Perhaps.
Well, I'm afraid you've got a nasty cavity. That tooth's gonna have to come out. Until then, no more chocolate. He fainted.
Hello there, and welcome to Random Access Television, the podcast where we let our gigantic 1960 supercomputer pick a random TV show that we'll watch and then talk about. This week's episode is brought to you by Good Burger. Good Burger, proudly making the word dude still a thing since 1994. This week, we'll be discussing the children's sketch TV show, All That. How are you doing, Nas?
I'm doing pretty good. This was all new territory for me, despite being a 90s kid. I did not have cable because we were poor.
I was thinking that. I was wondering if you'd ever watched this series before.
This was a journey into a part of the 90s that I did not have a lot of experience with. I mean, I definitely went to friends' houses and saw Nickelodeon and all that kind of stuff, but this was on a time slot. Was it like, maybe did it air originally later in the day, or?
Well, kind of like with all Nickelodeon shows, it kind of aired throughout the day, but
gotcha.
It premiered, I believe, at night on the SNICK thing on Saturday nights.
Okay.
After 8 o'clock, the only time that Nickelodeon, you know, went after 8 o'clock.
Right. That must have been why I pretty much missed it, because I wasn't exactly what you'd call like the kids sleepover type.
Mm-hmm.
So yeah, that sounds like that's about the time when the parents are kind of shooing the visitors out the door, like, all right, Nas, it's time to go home. And
right.
Thus,
have you called your parents yet?
Yeah. Exactly. And thus, this is my first time watching All That.
Wow. All right. Well, we got some stuff here. In case you don't know, All That is a children's sketch comedy show that originally aired on Nickelodeon from April 16th, 1994 to November 18th of 2000 for a total of 120 episodes. It has been brought back twice since, and we'll talk about those later in our show. It was created by Brian Robbins and Dan Schneider, who were two child actors who them met while starring on the 80s ABC sitcom Head of the Class. I'm going to be talking a lot about these two because they're not only important to the show, but Nickelodeon and children's television as a whole. So they started writing together on Head of the Class, and eventually when they co-hosted the 1988 Nickelodeon Kids' Choice Awards, they kind of met and mingled with Nickelodeon bigwigs and started producing content for them. Eventually it led to this show, which they pitched as kind of a, well, exactly what it is, a children's version of Saturday Night Live or the Carol Burnett Show. So they put together their cast first, then started writing sketches around the talents of the kids, like if they did specific impressions. And I'm going to read out the long list of the original cast here. It's a sketch show, so you know they got a lot. It was Angelique Bates, Lori Beth Denberg, Katrina Johnson, Kel Mitchell, Elisa Reyes, Joss Server, and Kenan Thompson. Schneider himself and some other adult actors kind of rounded out the cast as the default adult authority figures. The cast changed over time, with new actors coming in and old ones leaving, most notably then unknowns Amanda Bynes and Nick Cannon. Show was an instant smash hit, and kind of like its Nickelodeon predecessor, the Canadian import You Can't Do That on Television a decade earlier, it started to kind of dominate the aesthetic of the cable channel, crossed over with other series, having the cast members hold specials and do promos throughout the channel. So we watched two episodes for a preview. The first one is the earliest one available on Paramount Plus. Inexplicably, the first season isn't on there at all. So this was an episode that aired October 7th, 1995. Nas, did this give you some 90s feels, even if they weren't direct nostalgia?
Well, yeah, you know, I have a lot to say about this first episode. For one thing, I think the first thing that struck me is actually how un-90s it seemed. It seemed like, yeah, okay, the clothes, the mom jeans, the colorful shirts, sure. But it was a very, I was impressed with how modern it seemed. It was a very multicultural cast.
Right.
The body diversity with the kids was actually, I thought, was really remarkable.
Yeah.
I think from not having cable as a kid, I was used to a very white network family when I watched sitcoms, with the exception of things like Family Matters and a couple of other TGIF Friday, or that's the restaurant, TGIF, TGIF block. Anyway, the diversity, really, I was like, wow, I do not remember 90s TV being this colorful. And, you know, maybe it's possible that I was used to watching more adult-themed media, because I was never, even as a kid, I always was pretty eclectic with what I watched. I was, again, humbled by the fact that there were not a lot of jokes based on people's race or weight or physical appearance.
Right.
And I thought that was really interesting.
And I was kind of a little surprised by that, too. It did come up specifically in the first sketch, the Good Burger sketch, where they were talking about makeup. But it was kind of just a little thing that was like two or three jokes at most.
Yeah.
And then that was it in the entire episode.
Right, right. Yeah, it was. That's true. That's true. And I'll go into that more later when we talk about the second episode.
Mm-hmm.
But yeah, I think what was the most outstanding thing, well, there's a couple of things. Is first of all, I loved Lori Beth Denberg.
Mm-hmm. Yeah,
she had such big Gilda Radner energy, and I'm like, why wasn't this kid like more successful?
I was kind of curious about that. Yeah, she wasn't. I mean, there was some breakout stars like Nick Cannon or Keenan Mitchell or Keenan Thompson and Kel Mitchell.
Right.
But yeah, she never, she didn't really, she still acts occasionally, but she doesn't really do all that much anymore.
Yeah, I was like Googling around a little bit. It looks like she does some like kind of revival tours with the show sometimes. But yeah, I was really surprised. She stole the show. I wonder if it's, you know, I mean, I ventured her to say she's, you know, a larger girl in the 90s. Maybe just the world was not ready.
I mean, the only time she was especially good in this, there was a sketch where she's a librarian.
Yeah.
Something I wanted to pull clips from, but I didn't want to blow everybody's
eardrums
out.
She's
a librarian who keeps yelling at people to be quiet, but does the loudest possible things. And I got to say, that was the highlight, by far the highlight of this first episode. I laughed out loud several times, especially at one point where she's just kind of leaning over this, something is under a curtain, and then she just leans over and it's gong. And then she grabs the, whatever you call the paddle or whatever you call it. And it just, I knew exactly what was happening, but I was already laughing anyway.
Yeah, no, she was. I'm a little upset at whatever, you know, year eight me, because she looks a lot like I did as a kid. And I feel like if I would have maybe seen this kind of representation when I was a kid, I would have felt a little bit better about myself.
You're
so
eight.
It was, wow. Well, how, like, let's see, 95. I would have been a little older. I guess I would have been like about 9.
Yeah. I mean, I watched a decent amount of this, but I was kind of aging out when I was 13, 14 when it came on. So I still had a younger brother, so we still watched a decent amount, but I was in my never turning off Comedy Central era at that point.
Yeah. I mean, you know, at this point, I think I'd moved on to, oh, probably. I know in my kid repertoire, a big one, of course, was Star Trek: The Next Generation.
Mm-hmm.
That was like probably what I was watching at this point. But yeah, I'm a little sad for old, or I guess young me, that I didn't see this as it aired. Another thing that I thought was really interesting is I think this is the first time I have ever seen a black himbo character.
Yeah. Oh, really?
Yeah, because I was thinking, I was talking with a couple of friends, like, and I'd seen Good Burger, but because that came out like way later. That was like what, like 97, the movie Good Burger?
96, yeah.
Yeah, and like I thought it was cute, but as I saw it, sort of its origin point with all that, I was like, this is really fascinating, because of course, you know, you're used to seeing Bill and Ted, Wayne's World. I loved all of those, but seeing, you know, a black actor talking in that Valley Boy affect,
right,
which, you know, for anyone who doesn't know, it's exactly how I sound like, except for a guy, and just that very SoCal Valley vibe. And I'm so curious. I'm mad at myself because I meant to look up how, if Kel talked about how he came to that character, or if it was pushing from Schneider, or, you know, things like that. Because, yeah, I thought it was really interesting. It's just very rare to see that type of sweet but empty-headed dude being
right.
black. And I can't think of any others who fit that character
no,
type.
Not even in like the heavy African-American sitcoms that Mm-mm. they did around the same time. They had dumb guys, but never with the California Valley accent.
Right. I mean, I was thinking even with Family Matters, the Eddie was kind of a jock, but he wasn't really a himbo. This was straight like, you know, if you imagine like Bill and Ted, like way cool, dude. Like loved it. I thought it was very cool.
I pulled a clip. If you haven't heard the shtick before, I'm gonna show you a clip here.
What are you doing here? I told you not to come in today. We're trying to shoot a TV commercial.
Whoa, TV commercial? I love TV commercials. Have you ever seen the one with the bunny that keeps going and going?
I've seen it.
And going and going.
It's a wonderful commercial.
And just when you think he's gonna stop, he goes. He's tenacious.
Yes, he's quite a bunny.
He's like a magic bunny. Just goes.
And we're trying to shoot a TV commercial here.
The bunny's here.
Well, okay. Well, I do feel the need to point out the fact that there is definitely a payphone in the background of the library scene. And I literally said aloud, payphone, because it's so rare to see these days.
Yeah, I was noticing the big chunky CRT TV that
yes.
she was watching soap operas on.
Yes. Yeah.
There were a couple other sketches. So we talked about the library sketch and the Good Burger. They had a little introduction that was just kind of really silly about how they auditioned to be it. They did a lot more of those behind the scenes sort of things.
The audition scene, it reminded me of the grad school process. It's like the part where the adult is like grilling the kid and he's like, pants? And the kid is like, trousers. And he's like, my sister's name? And the kid's like, Sally. I'm like, yeah, dude, I feel you.
I thought it was the part where they were, you know, towing a truck and talking about how they all had good, strong thighs to be on the show.
Yes. Yeah. It was cute though. I felt very comfortable with this comedy and it was definitely very, very derived from SNL.
Oh, completely. Yeah.
So, you know, again, I know I've mentioned it already. I'm a huge SNL fan, especially the old ones. And yeah, I think it took that energy, put it with kids, and did a good job with it.
Yeah, I mean, just thinking about it, like that the Randy and Mandy sketch, the one with all the chocolate, it was very similar to the Julia Child blood sketch. I mean, there was even a little bit of body horror because they pull one of his teeth out at some
point. Right. I was screaming, I hate stuff with teeth. But it was hilarious. It was really well done.
And it's funny to me because this was around the time I was watching Comedy Central, and this was my sketch era. I just loved Kids in the Hall. I loved Monty Python, Saturday Night Live reruns. And so I really watched all that probably more than other Nickelodeon shows. And Kenan Thompson, who's in that sketch, he's only a few years older than me, but I feel like I've been watching him on TV my entire life at this point. Because he's been on Saturday Night Live for almost 20 years now.
Oh my God, are you? Yeah. Oh my God, 20 years.
There was a very small gap between when he was on this show and when he came on Comedy Central. I can't even separate his vibe that I like from him as a person, as opposed to like personal nostalgia. So,
I mean, yeah, I truly did not believe he was on. I can't believe that he was on so long. I feel like that I remembered him in some sketches in the last 10 years, but the fact is, you're right. He's been on since like, what, 2000, 2001? So,
three.
Okay, yeah. Amazing. Great job.
So I think we've wrapped up all of our thoughts here for that first episode. So let's jump forward a few years in the history of this series. So the original run ended in 2000, and the show wasn't really canceled so much as put on hiatus in order to get a new cast, as the biggest stars had already gotten fame elsewhere. So Kenan Thompson, we were just talking about, and Kel Mitchell, they spun off the Good Burger sketch into the Good Burger movie, but then they also got their own sitcom on Nickelodeon that lasted four seasons called Kenan and Kel. And so later editions, Amanda Bynes and Nick Cannon also got their own spinoffs that were titled, very imaginatively, The Amanda Show and The Nick Cannon Show, all of which involved either Brian Robbins or Dan Schneider as creators or writers. So they brought it back in 2002, just for a few years later, featured a new cast, which, not to insult anybody, the only notable name is Jamie Lynn Spears, Britney's sister. The series changed the format by having SNL-style guests that would come in and perform with the kids. And it's like a who's who of early aughts celebrities like Frankie Muniz, Tony Hawk, Tom Green, Mandy Moore, Aaron Carter and his brother, Nick Carter, and inexplicably, Buddy Hackett.
Okay.
Yeah, exactly.
Okay.
So meanwhile, Schneider and Robin continued their way to dominate Nickelodeon. They both went away from the network briefly. Schneider produced a show for the WB starring Amanda Bynes, and Robin directed some of the worst comedies of the early 2000s, the Eddie Murphy movies Norbit and Meet Dave. But eventually they'd come back, and every time they came back, they'd get more power. By the end of 2018, Robbins was head of a movie production company for Nick's parent company, Paramount, which included making like the Dora the Explorer movie. And Schneider was busy pumping out hit after hit for the network. So I know lists are kind of boring, but here's a list of the shows that Schneider produced for the network after he came back, after the new all that. Drake and Josh, Zoe 101, iCarly, Victorious, Sam and Cat, Henry's Danger, Game Shakers, and The Adventures of Kid Danger. All of Us, which brings it to this, a random choice from the currently producing third iteration of all that, which began airing in 2019 with Robbins once again producing. What did you think of the revival from 2020?
So they start out right away. They're in the Good Burger sketch again. So yeah. Kel's there, and he kind of toned down the Valley Boy voice a little bit, but maybe that's just part of getting older. But who was there is Fall Out Boy.
Was it all of Fall Out Boy or just Pete Wentz?
It was not. It was Pete Wentz and sort of some of the rhythm section, but Patrick Stump was not there. Where are you, Patrick?
I don't know enough about Fall Out Boy. I turn them off whenever they're on the radio, I'll be honest. But
well, I was never this huge Fall Out Boy fan, but I do think Pete Wentz is super adorable. So
I can see
and
that.
He had his little man bun. It was okay, he was cute. But anyway. I mean, I definitely missed the whole arc of the list that you just mentioned. I was way too old, not have cable.
I've gone back and watched a few of them. Sam and Cat, which had Jeanette McCurdy and Ariana Grande on it. It was a spinoff of two other shows, which is kind of weird. It was like a Laverne and Shirley kick to the point where they even had Laverne and Shirley in an episode, essentially playing Laverne and Shirley. Okay. It's actually one of my favorite sitcoms of all time.
Oh, okay. Yeah. That's super cool.
I unabashedly love it, especially the episode Salmon Cat. Think salmon like the fish, but anyways.
That's rad. No, I mean, I know about Ariana Grande because she dated The Weeknd. I know about Amanda Bynes because she has the funniest tweet I've ever read, but I'm not going to say it here because I don't want to get stuck with that R rating. But yeah. Basically, it was like Drake murder my P word, and it still makes me laugh. I love Amanda Bynes, but I never saw the shows. You know, Nick Cannon, I don't know. I do not know who this is. If they came up to me, I would be like, yo, dude, what's up?
Nick Cannon is the host of The Masked Singer and America's Got Talent.
I literally didn't know that.
Yeah, he was married to Mariah Carey for several years, and he is honestly a male himbo. He is, this is going to sound kind of cruel, but he is one of the dumbest people less on the TV, but he is such a good host for it.
I didn't even know about that. But as far as the show itself, I mean, there was a lot of things that were a pretty remarkable difference from the first iteration that we watched. There was way more body focused humor, and everyone is sort of like wearing these like flashy rich kid clothes. Like it's kind of, there was a certain, I feel like it sort of, the kids in the original All That seemed very relatable and like people I knew.
Right.
The people in this seemed like Disney Channel kids.
Well, and that's something that's changed. So I phased out of the Disney Channel Nickelodeon era, but I've kind of phased back into it, not just because I have my own kids who are actually way too young to be watching stuff like this. This is more aimed at, you know, 8 to 12
tweens.
Year olds.
Yeah.
But I've just kind of, I like watching the Disney and Nick Channel now because they're about the only people still making sitcoms with laugh tracks and five cameras and everything. And I'm old school. I like that stuff. I'll give anything a shot that has a laugh track, frankly, at this point, even if it's aimed at as 12-year-olds. And there's a few of those shows that I really like. Sam and Cat. I like Jesse on the Disney Channel. And there's a couple others I've watched here and there. So I've always had kind of a, like, I didn't even realize that I had liked this, but there was a Frankie Muniz movie with a Paul Giamatti called Big Fat Liar. Also, Amanda Bynes was in that. It came out in 2002. I have watched that movie maybe 10 times. I did not realize that it was created by Dan Schneider and written by him and directed by Brian Robbins.
This is a whole part of the world, the cultural world. Like, if you know me, you know I'm a pop culture junkie. But this is a whole part of the world that I know nothing about. This, like, completely bypassed.
And I just kind of skim it from time to time. Like, I didn't realize this stuff until later when I got into Sam and Cat. I watched an episode at random flipping through channels one day and just really enjoyed it and then kind of binged the whole thing. And which is why when we'll get to it later, it's kind of disappointing.
It's the sad part to this whole story. But yeah, I mean, there was some interesting, I thought. Well, like, there was the Marie Kondo, like, sketch. I thought that was a little below the belt. I don't know. I know everybody out there is, like, rolling their eyes, like, oh, Nos is the woke one. I thought that one was a little, it kind of, like, copped humor from Invader Zim. Yeah. And kind of just made it a little unappealing.
There were a lot more special effects. It was a higher budget show. There was a CGI moment where they, like, shatter a kid and then bring him back to life. And there were, like, lasers going off. They obviously didn't film this in front of a studio audience like they did the original. They couldn't have. There's just too many special effects.
Right. And then there was also, like, the Taylor Swift joke that was, like, 5 years too late.
Yeah, I kind of like that sketch a little bit because that one felt just like an SNL sketch, like the one that they play right after the update. I mean, if you had taken that sketch and put it on SNL, you could have gotten away with that 100%. Yeah, the joke that she does, the joke is that she writes sketches about people that she knows, and so throughout this audition of somebody pretending to be Taylor Swift, she's writing songs about the judges that are for the talent contest and the people around her in the room. I thought it was okay. It wasn't, nothing on the second episode really made me laugh all that much, except for Kel Mitchell's enthusiasm when he brought out the burger hose.
The burger hose! I want, and the fry hose!
The fry hose, yeah. So just for a contrast, just so you can hear it, so since it's the same sketch repeated twice, and oddly enough, it didn't have any of the kids in that opening sketch. It was just Kel coming back.
It was just
back.
Kel!
He's the default adult. He and Kenan Thompson actually produce the show now.
Okay.
They all come back every once in a while to come into there. But yeah, there was no adults in the sketch. I mean, no kids in the sketch at all. So let me go ahead and play a clip of that. Here's Pete Wentz and Good Burger.
Welcome to Good Burger, home of the Good Burger. Can I take your order? Whoa, you look familiar.
Yeah, Pete Wentz from the band Fall Out Boy.
Hey, any of you Fallout dudes need a harmonica player?
I think you mean harmonica.
No, harmonica. It's a hamburger harmonica combo. Let me show you.
My boyfriend Pete Wentz. Yeah. But yeah, I mean, one thing I liked in the original is that sort of like the adults were like this benevolent, kooky entity that clowned on the kids. And with this, that element kind of went away.
Yeah, at least in the ones that we watched, there were no adults outside of the Good Burger sketch.
Mm-hmm.
It was all kids playing adult authority figures themselves.
Which they did in the original, but I don't know, it hit different. It just hit different. The vibe was totally different.
So you have anything else to say about 2020, all that?
Oh, 2020, all that? I miss Lori Beth Denberg. Where are you, Lori?
I believe she has been on the current show several times.
Oh, okay. Well, I
believe, as a matter of fact, she even does the librarian sketch again.
Oh! Well, I'll have to watch that episode because I miss her. I'll never let go, Lori. I'll never let go.
So even though my last history segment ended only 3 short years ago, a lot has happened to our creators, Dan Schneider, Brian Robbins. In October of 2018, this is the good one, Robbins was promoted to the president of Nickelodeon, and as of the taping of this, is still running the network. It's completely his. Maybe that's coincidentally why they brought back all that, and they've also brought back Double Dare and Guts and several other late 90s shows, or maybe that's just the nostalgia cycle because younger millennials are having kids of their own and they want their kids to watch Rugrats. That's kind of how those things happen, which is also coming back, Rugrats. Schneider, on the other hand, is no longer employed by Nickelodeon, or as far as I can figure, anyone else. His then-airing shows in 2018 were canceled or given to other producers after allegations, and just for legal reasons, I stress these are allegations, don't sue me, began to surface online, both of his bad behavior on set, he was kind of abusive, but also of his foot fetish. This came to light after people started pouring through his shows and social media accounts, and it's kind of everywhere. It's inescapable. Example after example after example of his underage actresses doing things with feet. And at one point, even on social media, he was asking fans to submit pictures of their feet as a joke.
I mean, coming from someone, I know everyone out there is giggling because they're like, Nos, this is your moment. So, yeah, I think feet are great. I won't get into it because this is a podcast about TV. But yes, this man is sick.
Yeah.
Like, this guy, I mean, it's actually nothing to joke about. Like, yeah. This dude has some issues. And the feet thing is like the very tip of the iceberg.
Yes. I mean, that's the one thing people joke about, but that's the one that you can joke about.
Because that's the one you can joke about. Yeah. I mean,
several of the actresses like Amanda Bynes and Jeanette McCurdy have had public breakdowns that they have blamed in part on Dan Schneider. It gets pretty dark.
Right. Absolutely. And I mean, I know there's a lot of back and forth. Like, is it a Me Too thing or is it a Pizzagate thing? Clearly, you know, we're not here. We're not the court of public opinion here. But I think it's very clear that there was something wacky going on. And I feel sorry for a lot of the kids.
Yeah,
it sucks that we have the legacy of these shows. And, you know, yet again, someone was given too much free rein, not checked for the power that they wielded over people who were in positions where they could potentially take that abuse or were scared to, you know, speak up about. Yeah. So
she even make it mad. These were children. They're 12 to 17 years old at most.
They're kids.
Yeah.
They're kids. Exactly. And yeah, it just sucks. It just sucks. And
well, on that happy note, let's get to our reviews. We use a standard North American grading system. That means no E, you weird British freaks. So it goes A to F. Let's go ahead and you go first here. What did you think of the series?
Well, I'd say first episode that we watched, I'm going to go ahead and give that a B-. It was, you know, it was cute. It was good. I don't have, like, it maybe wasn't as amazing as a couple of the things that we've watched already.
Right.
But on the other hand, it wasn't bad. It was good. It was relatable. And I laughed.
Yeah.
The second one, just a solid C. It was very whatever.
Yeah, it's just fine. It's, I was, you know, kind of, I guess, impressed that they kept it up. I was also officially old in that I had no idea who the music guest was on that second episode. I had never heard of her
either.
Or the song.
Sorry,
whoever you were. I'd heard of the one in the original one had Naughty by Nature.
I mean, I knew Fall Out Boy. Fall Out Boy. But the actual, like, Zoomer that they had on,
yeah.
I don't know who that was.
Queen something or other. Yeah. She was fine. I kind of skip through her like I do on Saturday Night Live when I don't know who the music guests
are. Yeah, exactly.
Yeah, the first one, it definitely made me laugh more. Especially the library sketch. It's a reoccurring sketch. I might actually just fall into a YouTube wiki hole one day and just kind of look for more library sketches if I can find them, because that was just a great bit. I'd give that one like an A- for what it's trying to be. And the other one, yeah, C+, somewhere in that range. It's fine. The Taylor Swift sketch had some nice bones to it, but that was the only thing I will remember from this a week from now. So
just that and the kids shattering, which I'm going to have nightmares about. Like, don't show your kids this stuff. It's freaky.
Yeah, it's actually, what's one of the things, it's watching these shows later, it's surprising what you can get away with now on kids' TV, which you couldn't before. Like,
totally.
even minor things, they reference toilet paper on this, and I'm like, they could not reference that 25 years ago.
Oh, yeah, you're right.
Or watching some of these other more modern shows, there's jokes about, like, bras and tampons, and I'm like, whoa, okay, that's progressive, but I'm still just a little surprised.
It's like, the cell phone jokes.
Cell phone jokes.
Which that... ones? During the Taylor Swift one, she was like,
texting on the phone. Yeah.
I still am not used to cell phone jokes.
It's like watching an episode of The Simpsons and they're using an iPad. It's just,
right.
It's
like,
just not right.
Okay.
All right, so it's time to fire up our supercomputer. Make sure that the diesel fuel is all in there. Make sure the solar panels are ready to go. Everything all checked up. Here we go. Okay, it has spit out on this pen punch card the early 50s variety show, The Paul Winchell and Jerry Mahoney Show. The two surviving episodes are on YouTube, and we'll have links in our Twitter. And as an unusual thing here, I'm going to send a picture of the two hosts to Nos just to get her reaction.
Okay. Ah! Oh, God! Oh, God!
Jerry Mahoney is a puppet.
I hate this. I don't want to look at this. Don't send me these things.
Oh, now I'm going to do nothing but...
No!
You're going to get his friend Mortimer Snurd and Farfel the dog as well.
Are you serious? I hate these things.
All right, we'll see y'all next time. Go ahead and, if you can stop laughing, talk him out, Nos.
I can. Thanks for tuning into this episode of Random Access Television. And if you haven't already, please remember to subscribe to us on Apple and Spotify podcasts. We also love to read reviews, so go ahead and leave us one. You can find us at RATVPod, that's RATVPOD at twitter.com. And if you have questions, complaints, compliments, recipes, email us at ratvpod@gmail.com. We'd love to hear from you. Bye-bye.
Oh my God, I hate this.
I hate ventriloquists so much. I hate them. Like, I think it's the stupidest thing. Like, I respect, like, the vaudeville tradition it came out of, but it's like... I hate them. I just hate them. I can't believe I have to watch that.
This is Johnny Olsen speaking for Max Game 77, a Mark Goodson, Bill Clinton production. Stay tuned for Tattletales next over most of the CBS stations.